Welcome to Ask Prof. Brewer. I'm David Brewer, and I'm a pastor and teacher at Emmaus Bible Church in West Bend, Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's session, we'll talk about Easter. I know Easter has already passed, but taking a little break from Revelation, and then I'll talk about Easter, and then we'll continue on with Revelation. So this series on Easter is called From Death to Life, Celebrating the Resurrection. And of course, we celebrate Easter, or I like to call it Resurrection Day, once a year. But of course, I think we should celebrate it every day of the year. So the first thing I'll talk about is foreknown facts about the death of Jesus and about the Resurrection Day. And the first one is Jesus' actual death. So because the Romans had a century or two to perfect this method of executing criminals and enemies, by the time of Jesus, they were experts in ensuring the deaths of those they crucified. However, when it comes to Jesus of Nazareth and his experience on the cross, the result is most assuredly death. So even critical scholars agree this is the case. That was from Josh and Sean McDowell's book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. And crucifixion resulted in death. So the historical and medical evidence argues against the possibility of survival. There are at least 10 reasons to be confident that Jesus did indeed die on the cross. The first one, the nature of his injuries. His whipping, beating, lack of sleep, crown of thorns, and his collapse on the way to his crucifixion while carrying the cross were so life-endangering in themselves that crucifixion would have completed the murder. The second point, the nature of crucifixion virtually guarantees death from asphyxiation. Number three, the piercing of Jesus' side, from which came blood and water, and you can look at John 19:34, indicating serum separated from clotted blood, gives medical evidence that Jesus had already died. Four, Jesus said he was in the act of dying while on the cross. He said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit, Luke 23:46. John renders that he gave up his spirit, and that's John 19:30. The fifth point, the Roman soldiers, who were trained executioners, were charged to ensure that he died. See, even though it was customary for soldiers to speed death by breaking the legs of the victims, they did not break his legs, for their examination determined that he had already died. John 19:33. The sixth point. Pilate summoned the centurion to ensure Jesus had died before giving the body to Joseph for burial. And that's Mark 15:44-45. Seven, Jesus' body was wrapped in about 100 pounds of cloth and spices and placed in a sealed tomb until the third day, John 19:39-40. Matthew 27:60. If Jesus had not died from his previous torture, then he would have definitely would have died. He would have died in the tomb from lack of food, water, and medical treatment. Number eight, medical experts who have studied the circumstances surrounding the end of Jesus' life have concluded that he died on the cross. Nine, non-Christian historians from the first and second centuries, such as Tacitus and Josephus, recorded the death of Jesus of Nazareth. And the last, tenth reason, the earliest Christian writers after the time of Christ, such as Polycarp and Ignatius, verify his death by crucifixion on the cross as well. And that was from Josh McDowell's The Same Book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, and this is the updated version of that book. Well, this is a quote from Eusebius of Caesarea. The sufferer's veins were laid bare, and the very muscles, sinews, and bowels of the victim we're open to exposure. And so Jesus did that for all of us. That should cause us to fall even more deeply in love with him. Dr. Hewitt of Harvard Theological Review said, "There is astonishingly little evidence that the feet of a crucified person were ever pierced by nails." Well, that is not correct. And please send me an email if you want my PowerPoint. You can actually see this. It's a lot better than just hearing it. And by the way, my email is brewerhebrewprof@gmail.com. Or you could text me at 848-226-4306. So until relatively recent times, no physical archaeological evidence had been found of the practice of crucifixion. But in 1968, archaeologists working in Givat HaMitar, a suburb of Jerusalem, discovered a sealed family tomb containing 12 burial niches. In one, they recovered an ossuary with the bones of a 24 to 28-year-old male mixed with those of a child. So based on the ossuary inscription, the man's name was Yochanan, the son of HaGakol. Examination of the skeletal remains revealed a right heel bone with an iron nail 4.5 inches or 11.5 centimeters long embedded in it. This find constituted the first physical evidence of a crucified victim in the land of Israel and may shed new light on how crucifixions in antiquity were performed. Although traditionally, nails were thought to be driven through the hands and both feet, one on top of the other, this was not supported by the bones of Jonathan. We'll call him Jonathan. In this case, each leg was affixed laterally to the vertical stake. Therefore, this might present a new concept of crucifixion, one in which the victim's legs straddle the cross held up by ankles nailed from the sides. Initially, the anthropologist Haas, that's H-A-A-S, concluded that scratch marks on the skeleton's wrist suggested that nails had also been driven through the victim's wrist. Still, later examination by Israeli anthropologist Joe Zias and a study by Skeles and Charlesworth reversed this verdict, stating that evidence only supported ropes were used to secure the victim to the horizontal beam of the cross. However, the gospel accounts indicate that Jesus was nailed in both his hands or his wrist and his feet. And that's Luke 24:39, John 20:25-27. And what I just read to you, that was from a book called Zondervan, Handbook of Biblical Archaeology, a book-by-book guide to archaeological discoveries related to the Bible, pages 256 and 257. Second known fact, in addition, the first one was his death, and the second one, of course, the tomb was empty. But the first important point about this is the tomb was discovered by women. So if one were to fabricate an empty tomb in risen Jesus in first century Mediterranean culture, one would not cite women as eyewitnesses, given their low status as credible witnesses in the eyes of the people and the courts. I think that's dumb, but this is the way it was in the first century. And that was also from Evidence Demands a Verdict, the updated version, page 261. Second point, the disciples preached the risen Jesus within weeks in Jerusalem. Of course, those that went against the disciples, they could have easily, if they could have just shown the body, they could have shut them up pretty fast, but we know that didn't happen. The third point, the Jewish response assumes the body was gone, Matthew 28:15. The only polemic or offense offered by the Jews for which we have any historical evidence is the one recorded in Matthew 28:11-15. This text could not have been written if there was no Jewish counter-argument to the Christian understanding of the empty tomb at the time of writing. However, the Jewish polemic or defense does not dispute that the tomb was empty. It gives an alternate explanation. So this is a significant historical fact. This is strong evidence that the tomb was empty. That was also from evidence that demands a verdict. Number four, the tomb is empty. If the tomb had not been empty, such preaching cannot have occurred. The body of Jesus could have been produced, and since the location of Joseph Arimathea's tomb was likely well known, he was a respected member of the Sanhedrin, it would not have been difficult to find where Jesus was buried. So it's very interesting that when the guards assigned to secure the tomb told the chief priests that the angels moved the stone, the Sanhedrin actually believed the report of the resurrection, while they sought an explanation to deny it. At the same time, the disciples disbelieved the report of the resurrection and sought confirmation of it. That's an interesting point, isn't it? That was from J. Dwight Pentecost's book, The Words and Works of Jesus Christ, page 502. So there are three basic credentials that validate the claims that Jesus made about himself. And the first one is the impact of his teachings and miracles. The second one is fulfilled prophecy in his life. And of course, the third one is his resurrection. Now, there were a number of, well, some people call them resurrections, but they're actually resuscitations. They're not resurrections because they did die again. The first one, before I talk about that, is Jesus did appear and disappear at will. If you look at Luke 24, verses 31, 36, 37, and 51, and also John 20, verses 19 and 26. And he also ascended to heaven in his physical body. And we see that in Acts 1. Verses 6 through 11. Now, some of the resuscitations that we were talking about is Jesus raised the son of Zarephath's widow. And that was in 1 Kings 17:17-24. The second one, Elisha raised the son of the Shunammite woman in 2 Kings 4:35. A dead man returns to life when his body touches Elisha's bones. 2 Kings 13:21. Jesus raises the widow's son at Nain, and that's in Luke 7:13-15. Jesus raises Jairus' daughter, and that's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Jesus raises his friend Lazarus, and that was in Luke. Actually, I made a mistake in my PowerPoint. Wow, big surprise there. John 11:43-44. So there's a number of these resuscitations. The next one, dead saints came from the graves in Matthew 27:52-53. Peter raises Tabitha or Dorcas in Acts 9:36-42. And then Paul raises Eutychus in Acts 20:9-12. So next time we'll continue on with the series and we'll start with 1 Corinthians 15, verses 12-19. So thank you so much for joining me in today's Ask Prof. Brewer. I do indeed appreciate you taking the time to listen in today's session. If you have any disagreements or you want me to talk about something I haven't talked about so far, or if you want my PowerPoint, I gave my email address and cell number earlier. Feel free to write me. I'm really happy to share with you. And if you look at the Emmaus Bible Church website, if you can't find the link, just write me. I'm starting to add a lot of resources to Emmaus Bible Church's website in West Bend, Wisconsin. Well, shalom. Love you all. Hope you have a wonderful day.